Topic 1. The Separation of Church and State, Part 1. Baccalaureate Services. This is Lynn Kastner, Executive Director of the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union, bringing you another in a series of civil liberties programs produced by MCLU as a public service. We invite your comments and inquiries on our programs. Send your comments or for information your name and address to Minnesota Civil Liberties Union, 925 Upper Midwest Building, Minneapolis, Minnesota. On April 26th, the Minnesota branch of the American Civil Liberties Union Board took a position on baccalaureate services in public educational institutions. The text of the statement is as follows. The Minnesota Civil Liberties Union believes that any sectarian religious programs conducted by public educational institutions or involving the expenditure of funds allocated to public educational institutions is a violation of the constitutional principle of separation of church and state. The practice of holding specifically religious services, particularly baccalaureate services incident to graduation, in or under the sponsorship of public educational institutions, constitutes such a violation. The fact that such services may be interdenominational rather than purely sectarian in character does not make them any less instances of the establishment of religion forbidden by the Constitution. The prohibition of the establishment of religion in the First Amendment of the National Constitution is reinforced by provisions of the Minnesota Constitution. Ample religious facilities are available in Minnesota communities for the use of students and their relatives and friends on the basis of private initiative without the involvement of public educational institutions or public funds allocated to education. We find constitutional objections to all programs of a religious nature incident to graduation in or sponsored by public educational institutions. We find no constitutional objection to such programs, however, if they are sponsored by churches or private bodies and conducted out of school hours and off school property, and if they do not involve the official participation of faculty or require the attendance of students or faculty. If you would like a copy of the full text of the MCLU Statement on Baccalaureate Services, send your name and address to the MCLU office, Upper Midwest Building, Minneapolis, Minnesota. On this program today, I have with me Dr. Joseph Altholz, Associate Professor of History at the University of Minnesota, whose field of interest is in modern church history, who is the chairman of the Church State Committee of the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union, and is here today to discuss the MCLU position on baccalaureate services and other ACLU positions relating to religious exercises and religious practices in public schools and public educational institutions. Welcome to the program, Dr. Altholz.
Thank you very much.
I wonder if you could tell us first what the background of your committee's work is in relation to the board and what your committee did in studying this problem and in reporting your findings to the board.
Well, the function of the Church-State Committee is to study any problems that might arise in Minnesota with reference to either the separation of church or state and state or the free exercise of religion, the two clauses of the Constitution with which we are concerned. In the instance of baccalaureates, we had, of course, noticed that these services were quite common throughout the state, and we had considered whether these were indeed violations of either the federal or the Minnesota Constitution. And incidentally, I might mention that the Minnesota Constitution is the stricter of the two on all church-state matters. And in looking through both Minnesota and national ACLU records for the first thing we did was a survey of what positions had already been taken, we found that there were indeed positions taken on baccalaureates as such, but on various problems concerning religion in the public schools, which gave us some guidelines. A statement by the National ACLU, adopted in 1962, primarily concerned with religious holiday observances, was the most explicit in this regard. And we practically adopted our first paragraph from that. The American Civil Liberties Union believes that any program of religious indoctrination, direct or indirect, in the public schools or with public resources is a violation of the constitutional principle of separation of church and state and should be opposed. And in this connection, the statement, which I'm excerpting here, went on to point out certain specific matters. The teaching of religion in the public schools is barred by the Constitution. The practice of regular Bible reading and organized prayers represents a form of indoctrination which should also be barred. Incidentally, this statement was adopted before the Supreme Court decisions on the subject which upheld the ACLU position. The teaching of religion should be distinguished from teaching factually about religion as, for example, an element of world history or of social sciences. I'm always concerned with that because that happens to be my own line. And another point, the use of public funds or public property for the display of religious symbolism should be opposed as a governmental endorsement of religion. Well, this is typical of many ACLU positions. We found that in Minnesota we had been specifically concerned with religious observances incidental to holiday seasons, Christmas observances particularly, and had adopted a resolution alerting the public to that problem back in 1961. We then turned our attention specifically to the case of baccalaureate services and found several possible grounds on which constitutional objections might be found to those services. In the cases where compulsion is exercised requiring the students or the faculty to participate in any way, there's a clear case of the violation, or potential violation, of the right of free exercise of religion by that student or faculty member who might not, of his own accord, care to go along with whatever formulary is adopted for a baccalaureate service. And even when such is not involved, the involvement of the state through the public schools, through its public property, through the time, on-duty time of public employees, constitutes an instance of some species of establishment of religion. And so we recommended to the board a draft of the statement which was ultimately adopted and which you have read.
We might note that the national office recently informed me that in one of the earliest positions taken by ACLU, it was pointed out that earliest positions on the church-state problems, it was pointed out that baccalaureate services were an instance of unconstitutional violation. This will be distributed in the near future to affiliates in our policy manual, which we will be discussing in some of our future programs. It might be interesting to spend a couple of minutes reviewing some of the other study that the board has gone into prior to taking this position and prior to the implementation of this position, which we shall discuss in a few minutes. In addition to the recommendation and study of the Church State Committee, whose resolution was presented to the board and culminated in the board statement, some months ago, the Due Process Committee, which is a committee of lawyers working for the ACLU and MCLU board, did a legal memorandum on the case law in the Supreme Court and other case law pertaining to the problem of religious practices in the schools and submitted this to the board. Their conclusion was that baccalaureate services conducted under the sponsorship of state public educational institutions would appear to be unconstitutional under the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment as applied to the states by means of the 14th Amendment. Going back to board action prior to this report, the Student Civil Liberties Committee, another committee of the board, did a statewide survey of practices involving baccalaureate services and other practices in institutions of higher education, sending questionnaires to not only the university, but state colleges and other public institutions of higher learning throughout the state, and gathered at that time information that baccalaureate services in the institutions of higher education were fairly well widespread. Since the statement has been issued, we have sent copies, transmitted copies of the statement to superintendents of schools in 35 school districts in the surrounding metropolitan area, and also to the State College Board, the Junior College Board, and University of Minnesota. ACLU, as we know and many of our listeners know, become interested in a problem because and only because it involves a constitutional right. And with this in mind, taking the problem of separation of church and state, the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, has been pointed out to be one of the unique contributions to this country made in the heritage of democracy. The insight of the Founding Fathers that freedom is impossible without separation had behind it the experience of the ages. James Madison referred to the torrents of blood that have been split in the world, spilt in the world, and vain attempts of the secular arm to extinguish religious discord. He recalled Roman emperors' notorious persecution and torturing of the Christians, the Spanish Inquisition, and the burning of heretics, the persecution of Catholics in Protestant England and in the colonies. With this as part of our constitutional history in the early years of our country, I'd like to ask you, not only as a representative of the Civil Liberties Union, but as a historian, what relevance the constitutional history surrounding the establishment of the First Amendment, the adoption of the First Amendment, has to practices of church and state today in modern times.
Well, there's more to the history than those very dramatic instances of persecution, because involved in this also is the fact that when the state intervened in matters religious, determining the one formulary which should be accepted as orthodox and required of all persons, it not only persecuted the minorities, which is the obvious case and the one obviously objectionable, but it also, in fact, interfered with the religious freedom of the side that won, in that it won by grace of the state, not by its own inherent strength, and that frequently in the course of these conflicts, the state, in intervening and choosing which side it would support, interfered with the religious freedom even of the victorious church. That there was an internal action of the state on the church by its very patronage and assistance. And at least Madison, among the founding fathers, was concerned with this as much as with the liberty of the affected minorities. And this is certainly still relevant today. We do not find very many instances of outright persecution, though a good deal of harassment still exists as far as the minorities are concerned. But we do find that insofar as our society, by its official action, patronizes one religion, several religions, or all religion collectively, it is acting to shape the religious character of the people in a direction which might not come about had the state not intervened, and in that sense is infringing the religious freedom even of the majority. This is a very topical issue today.
Taking the statement and going into some of the particulars that are discussed, the practices that have come to our attention vary greatly. In some schools, in smaller communities, the baccalaureate service, if it's school-sponsored, may reflect the religious feeling in the community. And where there are communities with one or almost only a single religion, that religion will be represented in the baccalaureate services. In other communities where there's more of a multiplicity of religions, the school authorities may rotate among the various churches in the group or in the community, giving expression, therefore, to the at least the majority in terms of numbers of religion. In some other communities, a baccalaureate service may be always planned to be interdenominational, to have a speaker, to rotate among speakers, but to have the program itself reflect as little as possible the reflection of any one religious or theological approach. Some communities will compel the attendance of students. Others may have it in the school building and not require the attendance. I wonder if you'll comment on these various sorts of practices in terms of the statement and explain what the position of the ACLU in relation to the different practices of these baccalaureate services that I mentioned.
Well, all of them are objectionable, but in different ways. In any case, whether by constant practice or rotation, where the services of one particular denomination are employed, obviously this is a favoritism that may adversely affect at least some of those who do not belong to that particular denomination. But I want to highlight one sentence in the statement that refers to the case of interdenominational services, which, by the way, usually turn out to be a sort of composite Protestantism. It's practically impossible to have a so thoroughly interdenominational service that everybody is definitely comprised. But however it is done, interdenominational is just as objectionable as anything purely sectarian. The fact that such services may be interdenominational rather than purely sectarian in character does not make them any less instances of the establishment of religion. The state may not do for all religions collectively, or any number of religions collectively, any more than it may do for one religion by itself. And indeed, in sponsoring something interdenominational, you are favoring those groups that do tend to cooperate with each other, as distinct from the more exclusive religious groups that do not favor cooperation. And in so doing, again, you have a state intervention, a state choice in favor of one religious tendency as against another.
The First Amendment, of course, has two parts to it which have relevance to the rights under it. One is the Establishment Clause, the other the Free Exercise Clause. I wonder if you could discuss for a moment how the Establishment Clause, which is highlighted in the statement, it pointed out that a baccalaureate service is prohibited by the Establishment Clause. Explain in what manner the Establishment Clause prohibits religious practices.
Well, any state sponsorship of a religious exercise gives a preference to whatever religion or religions may be comprised in that exercise. It gives the patronage of the state, the prestige of the state, occasionally some monetary support, or the physical facilities of the school, for instance, might be involved. But in any case, it gives some state patronage, support, and assistance to whatever religious groups may be involved. And this is precisely what is forbidden by that first clause that Congress, and by extension the states, shall make no law regarding an establishment of religion. Congress, and by extension the states, may not pass any law which determines what religions shall be held, practiced, or favored or assisted. And it's in the favoring and assisting category that the separation of church and state is involved here.
Well, as you pointed out, establishment refers to two practices in terms of baccalaureates or other religious services. One would be one forbidden involvement of the state, and we should point out that we are talking now only of public schools, since public schools are an extension of the state. But establishment becomes a problem when the schools sponsor a particular religion or sponsor a religious practice. That is, they are putting forward or presenting a religious belief to their students. And a second problem, which you've mentioned, is that of funds, that the state is spending state funds to establish religion.
Or the use of facilities, which amounts to much the same thing.
Yes. What has the Supreme Court discussed this in terms of spelling out both sponsoring and explaining the use of funds or facilities in terms of establishment?
Well, one citation is appropriate. It's from Justice Brennan's concurring opinion in the Shemp case, 1963. He refers to the state conducting a religious exercise, and the court holds that cannot be done without violating the neutrality required of the state by the balance of power between individual church and state that has been struck by the First Amendment. But, he goes on to say, the Establishment Clause is not limited to precluding the state itself from conducting religious exercise. It also forbids the state to employ its facilities or funds in a way that gives any church or all churches greater strength in our society than it would have by relying on its members alone. I think both these are applicable to the case of baccalaureates, because if they are at all sponsored by the state, they amount to the state conducting its own religious service. And secondly, they do give either to one particular church, one group of churches, or all churches some greater strength by way of prestige and patronage, especially considering the fact that children are impressionable, than those churches would have if they did not have this state assistance.
In discussing for a moment the Free Exercise Clause, I think it could be pointed out that an interdenominational service would infringe on the religious beliefs of many persons whose theological approach would come into conflict even with an interdenominational or non-denominational approach. I might just mention that Edmund Kahn, professor of law at New York University, discussed in an article on government and prayer a few of the denominations and types of religious conscience to whom the text of any non-denominational prayer or religious exercise would be unacceptable. He says, quote, first, all those who believe in non-theistic religions, including ethical culture, Buddhism, and Confucianism. Second, all who believe in pantheistic religions, as exemplified by Spinoza and Einstein. Third, all those who believe in polytheistic religions, pointing out that William James said that every practical theism has been more or less polytheistic. And fourth, all of those who believe that a God is not almighty. Some of the critics of the Supreme Court and of the ACLU position have stated that by refusing, saying that the Constitution does not allow schools to provide religious experiences, infringes on the free exercise of the of religion of those students who would want to participate in such a service. What is your reaction to that?
Well, first let me go back to this these categories suggested by Professor Kahn of those who would find even interdenominational prayer, even the most broadly conceived, objectionable. We could add to them, since in many communities people might consider those far-fetched, we could add to them those particularistic kinds of Christians who insist on deliberately exclusive kinds of prayer, their own, that is to say. And these may be found very frequently in Minnesota. That in not only are these rather exotic categories to be offended, but also even among the various varieties of Christianity in this country, and we have a large number of those, there are some which, among their tenets, preach the doctrine of particularism, that they and only they, or their and only their practices, are proper, and that one should not join. And these, too, may be offended, and their free exercise might be infringed by a compulsory joint prayer service. But to return to what you were raising here, the objection of those who say that we're that in forbidding baccalaureate services, or, to take in other instances, in forbidding prayer in the public schools, which comes under much the same rules here, that we are infringing on the religious liberty of the majority, or of those who would wish freely to join in prayer, several things might be said. First, a little quotation again from the Shemp case, which is the leading case in general on this type of subject. This is from the majority opinion. While the Free Exercise Clause clearly prohibits the use of state action to deny the rights of free exercise to anyone, it has never meant that a majority could use the machinery of the state to practice its beliefs. The relevant consideration here, then, from the court standpoint, is not so much the freedom to worship or not to worship, but the freedom to use the state, the machinery of the state, the public schools in this case, as an assistance to one's worship. As for freedom to worship itself, assuming indeed that the public school students would of themselves spontaneously think of organizing some sort of prayer services or baccalaureate services at one time or another, ample facilities are available for them in Minnesota, outside of the schools, that we are not infringing, in fact, on their freedom of exercise of religion. We are merely saying that they cannot so exercise their religion as to involve the state in patronizing it or assisting it. They are perfectly free at any time to hold any kinds of services, including a service some way related to graduation, let us say, outside school buildings, outside of school hours, without any official connection with the school or its personnel. And indeed, in our statement, we call attention to that very possibility, that there is no objection to religious programs incident to graduation, whatever they may be called, if they are outside the school context, outside the public facilities. That these are perfectly permissible and indeed are very valid ways of expressing the religious commitments of the students and their desire for a shared religious experience connected with graduation. What we do say, however, is that they may not involve the public agency, in this case the schools, in their worship, which is, above all, a private matter.
Now, some criticism has been raised by people, both of ACLU and of the court, that if we take the step of banning prayer and Bible reading, which of course has been dealt with by the court, and other religious practices, such as baccalaureate services, which ACLU believes is clearly unconstitutional under the Bible and prayer cases, that the next step will be to attack In God We Trust on the coins, Under God in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, opening invocations or expressions of religious nature at the opening of legislative and other public meetings or public bodies. And I have often pointed out that ACLU as an organization has not opposed the practices of In God We Trust, the Pledge of Allegiance, and opening legislative services, as we are often identified with. I wonder if you could comment on whether there has been an indication in the Supreme Court, and perhaps what your own opinions are of these practices, which are certainly public in nature.
Well, first of all, the court has dealt with this in the Engel case, which was the first of the great school prayer cases. It dealt with exactly the same argument that might be raised that you have just suggested, and declared that such patriotic or ceremonial occasions bear no true resemblance to the unquestioned religious exercise that the state has sponsored in this instance. That is to say, in the case of school prayers or of baccalaureate services, and I think the law is pretty much the same for both, that these are distinct religious services, religious exercises, that the state is sponsoring, as distinct from the incidental bringing in of religion to something that is essentially a public, non-religious observance. I would say that even in such cases, care should be taken to avoid giving offense to minorities at the least, but that in any case, they are not covered by by any court decisions to date, and probably will not be covered by any court decisions which we might contemplate. That this is an incidental reference to religion, which it's almost impossible to prevent and might come up spontaneously, as distinct from the formal sponsorship of a clear, positive religious exercise, such as a school prayer or a baccalaureate service.
Other critics of the court and of ACLU have claimed that any attack on religious practices in the schools is an attack on religion itself, What is your reaction to that?
Well, first of all, our position clearly differentiates the religious exercises connected with the schools, or any religious practice connected with the schools, from all the other potential religious practices that might go on in the community. We are continually repeating this position, that religion is, that the separation of church and state is intended for the sake of the churches as well as the states, that it is intended to secure their freedom, and that the only way we can secure their freedom is to secure the state will have nothing to do with religion at all, or as little to do as is possible, and that in particularly the agencies of the state may not be used for the furtherance of any religious purpose whatsoever. If, as the court once said in another case, we are a religious people and our institutions presuppose a deity, if we are indeed a religious people, the absence of any formal reference to religion in our school system will not change that situation one bit. It merely means that our religion will come from ourselves as people and not from the patronage of the state. And this, I think, in the end, tends to the benefit of the churches themselves. We can find historic examples of this, where churches have actually been weakened in their hold on the popular mind in other countries by the very support they received from the state. In many countries where one religion has been long established and others have been pretty well eliminated, where the state sponsors one particular religion, the actual level of church attendance, for instance, as a measure of religious belief and adherence and practice, is very low. Whether you look at Spain or Sweden, you'll find that sort of phenomenon. On the other hand, in America, where we have had a continuous tradition of no state assistance, or as little as we can have, we find that religious attendance, religious practice, at least the outward professions of religious belief, and probably a good deal of inward religious belief, has prospered and grown by whatever indices we may use. And that it seems that freedom and the lack of state assistance have helped the churches more than any patronage, any nominal religiosity on the part of the state might do. In fact, I can think of only one country where the constant level of religious attendance and observance is higher than the United States, and that is Poland, where the church is being persecuted.
That causes me to ask you, as a historian, to comment a little further on the fact that America, in its constitutional history, has been a separatist country in terms of church and state, whereas many other countries, there has not been the problem, legally or in their constitutional framework, of protecting people against involvement between church institutions and the state. What is your feeling as to the difference between the United States as a separatist country in terms of its effect on religion and other countries which are not?
Well, the origins of this differentiation lie largely in the fact that by the time we became independent, we were a nation which had several different religious denominations among our population. Well, first of all, it was rather impractical for anyone to claim dominance except perhaps in a local situation. And secondly, those that had been exposed to suffering some disabilities because of their minority status were quite determined and were able to exercise their determination through the democratic process that they would not allow this to happen again. Largely, our heritage of religious freedom and separation derives from our religious diversity. I'm not sure that if we had had one common tradition throughout the entire United States, that we might not have been like some of these European countries. And that if we are evolving toward a common merged religiosity, we might not have, in the future, more religious, more problems about separation of church and state than we have even now.
In the majority opinion in the Shemp case, the court pointed out that there were over 83 religious organizations or religious sects in the United States that had membership of 50,000 or more. It would seem that in this climate there would be a competition of religions, which perhaps would be absent in countries where there was not separation. What effect do you see as a church historian on religion in a situation which in effect fosters or stimulates competition among religions?
Well, I have found as a historian that this has generally been to the advantage of those religions that willingly enter into the competition. I think that the same general rule in economics that competition stimulates applies also to religion. And that, in fact, you can't avoid it. The countries which suppressed inter-religious competition were then faced with the competition of atheism. And the churches not prepared to compete found that they were in a more disadvantageous than if they had already been engaged in competing among themselves. Competition, I think historically, that is to say in the modern period, the last two centuries at least, has helped those religions that were ready to engage in it. What disturbs me to some extent is that many of our churches are actively seeking some sort of state patronage, some sort of relief from competition. And in a sense, what the ACLU is doing is trying to apply the antitrust approach to this to prevent such improper combinations and stimulate the competition that itself stimulates religion.
As the court pointed out also in the Shemp case, in your comment on atheism caused me to find this. Mr. Justice Black was quoted in the Tarasco case as saying, quote, "We repeat and again affirm that neither a state nor the federal government can constitutionally force a person to profess a belief or disbelief in any religion. Neither can constitutionally pass laws or impose requirements which aid all religions as against non-believers, and neither can aid those religions based on a belief in the existence of God as against those religions founded on different beliefs." I think another problem that has been raised in terms of baccalaureate services is the question of whether or not there is compulsion to attend. Compulsion or coercion in terms of the students, I think our statement indicates, goes beyond the mere requirement of whether a student attend or not. I wonder if you care to comment on some of the problems in terms of compulsion that are raised by baccalaureate services, and perhaps comment on whether the court has considered this in its past decisions.
Well, in any case where the students are required to attend, or even where attendance is decreed to be normal, though some may be excused upon application, you have an instance of compulsion which is forbidden and which the court has dealt with. In the original district court disposition of Shemp, for instance, the statement was made, the fact that some pupils, or theoretically all pupils, might be excused from attendance at the exercises does not mitigate the obligatory nature of the ceremony. The exercises are held in the school buildings, and perforce are conducted by and under the authority of the local school authorities. If there is a requirement to attend, it is obviously an invasion of the free conscience of the student who might otherwise choose not to attend. Even if he may be excused on the basis of some request, the necessity of making the request and of being put in a sort of abnormal category discriminates against him. In fact, that was the basis on which the court ruled in another of the school prayer cases. Our statement, however, does go beyond compulsion. Even if, say, the exercises are voluntary, if they are conducted under school auspices, there is a distinct encouragement to attend on the part of a state agency, namely the school. And, well, our position in general is simply that the state may not encourage or discourage in the matter of religion. The state should leave the religion of its citizens exactly as it would be by the free operation of non-public agencies.
Justice Brennan, in his concurring opinion in Shemp, pointed out some of the examples of how a child or a school pupil can be coerced in just in a sponsorship of a religious practice, whether or not the child was compelled to attend. He pointed out that Justice Frankfurter's answer to a similar contention in the McCullum case was that a child is offered an alternative may reduce the constraint. It does not eliminate the influence by the school in matters sacred to conscience and outside the school's domain. The law of imitation operates, and nonconformity is not an outstanding characteristic of children. The result is an obvious pressure upon students to attend. He also pointed out that 50 years ago in Louisiana, the Supreme Court stated that children would be excused from opening exercises because of their beliefs, and excusing such children on religious grounds, although the number may be small, would be a distinct preference in favor of religious beliefs of the majority and work a discrimination against those who would be excused. He pointed to the Supreme Court of Wisconsin 70 years ago, which said the excluded pupil tends to lose caste with his fellows and is liable to regard it with aversion and subject to reproach and insult. But it is a sufficient refutation of the argument that the practice in question tends to destroy the equality of pupils, which the Constitution seeks to establish and protect, and puts a portion of them in serious disadvantage in many ways with respect to others. Now, these last two instances come from state court cases arising under their state constitutions as long as 50 and 70 years ago. I'd like you to comment on the various state constitutions dealing with the problem of separation of church and state, how they stack up, particularly Minnesota.
Well, state constitutions do vary, but in general, the Midwestern states, and particularly Minnesota, are far more explicit in their prohibitions of any connection between church and state than is the federal. The Minnesota Constitution has several provisions which seem rather clearly to prohibit such practices as baccalaureate services, school prayers, etc., just as explicitly, or indeed more explicitly, than the federal. In some cases, this was discovered, as was pointed out, 70 or 50 years ago. Perhaps we are forgetting it in these more easygoing modern times. But there they are. That's the Constitution, and I think it ought to be enforced.
I'd like to thank you, Dr. Altholz, for talking with us on this program on the problem of baccalaureate services and the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union position in regard to such services and other religious practices. This is Lynn Kastner, Executive Director of the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union, bringing you another in a series of educational programs as a public service produced by MCLU. If you would like a copy of our statement on baccalaureate services or other information, we invite you to send your name or send your comments and inquiries to the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union, Upper Midwest Building, Minneapolis, Minnesota,